This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Podcast 373, officially on the deck. I've got the tiki torches lit. The lights are up so I can see what I'm doing. But I got the grill fire. Just had a fantastic, my usual dinner of steak and broccoli and kale. So I had a great dinner, and now I'm drinking coffee. And it's 1:30 in the morning. Go time for the Bob Davis Podcast. So we're going to give you some updates for Tuesday morning, right after the Memorial Day weekend in Podcast 373. So Memorial Day opens the summer season. And I don't know about you, but for me, every Memorial Day, I know I see summer has started, and I think to myself, I think about new cars. I think about cars. And if you're looking for a new car, quote-unquote new car, let me tell you about a kick-ass place to get a kick-ass car, and it's not going to cost you a fortune. And you know what I'm going to say. You know I'm going to say xgovernmentcars.com. And yes, they have nicer, newer vehicles. Ed Johnson, who's been doing this for a while now, really has learned where to get the best formerly government cars, which, of course, are maintained because they're government cars, and then they are turned around to you. So they're one-owner cars, and they're turned around to you through xgovernmentcars.com. We're talking about Chargers, Impalas, Next Gen Forge, which is the Ford police sedan, and eventually the Ford SUV, plus trucks, vans, and SUVs. And here's the thing, they have great financing for all levels of credit, the good, the bad, and the ugly, so you can get approved easily. And you're not borrowing as much, which I think is great. And especially if you're looking for a Yukon or you're looking for an Expedition, you know, they can get pretty pricey, especially if you're buying new ones. X-Government Cars only carries one-owner, professionally maintained government and fleet vehicles. Ed had a kick-ass Expedition out there. I was over there last week, and it had a it was black with a tan interior. And I said, where did this come from? This thing is super clean. And he goes, oh, that came from the FBI. So he knows where to get the good ones. And if you're looking for an Expedition, a Yukon, a truck, this is the place to go. And you never know what you're getting at other dealers. You know, a lot of people sell these things, but they don't know what they're doing in terms of getting hold of them. Only xgovernmentcars.com has it all. So let's review. Cash deals direct from owner Ed Johnson, which means go in there and talk to them because you can make deals. A three-day satisfaction guarantee. Let's suppose you get the Crown Vic or the Expedition or something like that. You don't like it, bring it back. You know, it's no big deal. And of course, financing for all levels of credit. You can apply safely and securely online 24/7 at xgovernmentcars.com, or you can go visit X-Government Cars, and I would highly advise it if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metro, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. Don't forget, the grand reopening event is on now. Everything is better at
xgovernmentcars.com.
I hope I didn't wake up the neighbors, but I can't help myself. Well, I guess the place to start is Memorial Day weekend in two things. So the podcast I did before the weekend, so it would have been Friday morning's podcast, I was talking about it being a great weekend. And as is typical in Minnesota and parts of the Midwest, you know, it's so weird how it started to rain kind of on Friday. It was kind of a gray, cold day on Friday. Saturday, it rained. Sunday, it poured down rain. No, that was today. Yeah, no, Sunday it poured. Last night it poured down rain. So Monday morning, it was still gloomy. And then right about the time people would have started coming home from the lake, it cleared up and was beautiful. And tonight it is gorgeous out here. And you can smell the lilacs and you can smell all the trees. And I guess for people that have allergies, that's kind of a pain. But the trees are really full. And, you know, if you live in the Midwest, you don't necessarily appreciate this as much as if you were from the desert. So people out in Arizona just don't see this kind of foliage. And my deck is surrounded by trees. So I'm actually in a jungle out here. It's really great. And it is really thick. So now the trees have fully sort of opened up. Somebody told me that the allergy season ends for people that are allergic to oak leaves or something like that. Allergies end, the allergy season or the susceptibility or the active part of the allergy ends when the trees are fully extended. And it's just amazing to see these beautiful just trees, especially since winter is such a barren experience up here. And we didn't even have that bad of a winter. I mean, Boston and Northeast got crushed by the winter enough that it's the excuse, you know, for all that ails the economy of the country, which is always interesting to me because you never hear that as an excuse in Minnesota because we deal with this kind of weather all the time. You really don't hear weather as an excuse for economic problems in Chicago because or Madison or Milwaukee or Green Bay or Sioux Falls or any place up here because or Wyoming, you know, because we deal with really extreme weather all the time. So, you know, I guess now it'll be storms and tornadoes that we'll have to deal with. So this is where we're at with Memorial Day. It wasn't odd at all. It was a typical Minnesota, for me anyway, Memorial Day weekend. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the lake on Memorial Day weekend, and everyone is up because they're all expecting this great weekend, and it rains the whole weekend. And you end up going from cabin to cabin, hey, what's going on? Or you end up going to the bars because there's nothing else to do except for the brief respite that usually happens on Memorial Day itself. And then it's time to go home. And then you get in the car and you start driving. In my case, I'm driving west from Wisconsin. And so as soon as you start driving west, especially if you leave at 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, aside from the traffic, the first thing that happens is you notice that the sky is clearing and you're like, there it is. Yo, of course. Now it's beautiful blue skies because Memorial Day weekend is over. So I don't know how your Memorial Day weekend was over, but it ended with sunshine and beautiful weather today, if a bit wet. So I just want to say a couple things about Memorial Day itself. Just in terms of scanning the news today in preparation for the podcast, and what I do pretty much every day is just scan and print and read, I noticed, and on Facebook as well, a lot of people thanking veterans for their service. And Memorial Day has kind of morphed into this thanking veterans for their service thing. And I noticed at least one piece on one of the major network sites, I think it was CNN, about some guy that made some comments. He was a veteran, made some comments about people in this country don't. It's all about hamburgers and French fries and barbecues and the three-day weekend, and they don't really appreciate what Memorial Day is, which I think is true. And I have a couple of things I want to say about. First of all, Memorial Day we've only had a three-day holiday in the United States on Memorial Day since 1971. So this is relatively new in the broad history of the United States. Secondly, Memorial Day itself is a day which was set aside originally after the Civil War, and it is specifically to recognize and pay tribute to those who died serving in the military. It is not for the veterans. Veterans Day is for the veterans. And of course, it's always good to thank veterans for their service. And I'm not trying to say anything about that. I'm just saying that Memorial Day is specifically set aside to recognize those who gave their lives in service. And they have given us a lot. You know, the United States has survived, and particularly in the Civil War, as well as World War II, but the Civil War too, which really spurned the holiday. Or the recognition. I hate to call it a holiday because it really is a solemn recognition. And it was designed so that people could put the flowers on the graves of the Civil War dead. And they chose May 30th because they figured that this would be the day when flowers would be blooming across the United States, such as it was in the 1860s. But, you know, the guy, and I'm sorry I don't have that story here, but the guy who made the comments about people don't understand or don't seem to even be aware that this is a solemn day to recognize the people who've given their lives in military service to the country. It's interesting to me because I spent some time this weekend I'm still reading this book about the Burma, China, India theater of operations during World War II. And I haven't read any World War II books in a while. I think the last book I read was actually about Vietnam and intelligence and the Pentagon Papers and all that stuff. So I haven't really been reading a lot about World War II. And, you know, VE Day just passed. I think it was May 6th. And really, nobody even noticed that it was VE Day, which was a huge deal in our history and in the history of Europe, and nobody even really noticed. And I think it's worth noting that in terms of Memorial Day, the United States, fewer and fewer people are really on the tip of the sword in terms of military action, and more of our military actions are actually, for lack of a better term, sanctions or resolutions in which some level of military force is applied. There was a point at which, during the first Persian Gulf War in 1991, I read one of the books on the big, you know, the armor campaign. And one of the main generals said to one of the other main generals at one point, there was a captain who joined them on top of this hill, and spread out before them was the entire combined force, Canadians, you know, Egyptians, U.S., Britain, France, etc., in the you know, in that wheeling movement across the desert into Iraq in 1991. And one of the generals said to the other, take a good look at this, because you'll never see this again. This is something that you'll never see again in your lifetime. And, you know, the invasion of Iraq wasn't even, it was a fraction, let's just say, let's use correct language. It was a fraction of the force that attacked Iraq originally and threw them out of Kuwait. So the second invasion of Iraq, while it was a large military operation, as a percentage of the total population, it was not big. And as a percentage of the total population, there aren't a lot of people serving. And while there were, you know, a number of deaths in the Iraq conflict, and we obviously remember those people on Memorial Day, compared to World War II or Korea or Vietnam, it doesn't affect as many people. So I don't think people are as fully aware of sacrifice. And this is a big issue, and it probably will be somewhat of an issue in the 2016 election. It's somewhat of an issue that people feel like we need to do something to make sure that everybody feels the sacrifice. In other words, we need a draft army, which is a huge mistake. That's not what we need. I hate to say this, but you almost don't want the country to feel that sacrifice, because that would mean then that we were engaged in a major conflict that affected everyone, and that's a lot of death. So I'm not sure that I think the people that are fighting so that that doesn't happen. I think the people that are engaged in doing what they're doing, even with the sanctions and the wars that are sanctioned by Congress, But in terms of their comparison to other conflicts, are smaller and more contained. And I think their intention is to keep it smaller and more contained so that the people in this country remain safe. I mean, it's going to be an open debate whether we should all feel a sense of sacrifice and what's wrong with us when we don't. On Memorial Day, I don't have anyone in my family who died in a war, although I have many people in my family who fought in many different wars, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, and Iraq. So, you know, it's not something that's far from my mind, and it isn't something that's far from my mind on Veterans Day. But I do think about when you look at the grand scope of you know, the whole reach of history of the United States, you know, you do and you should think on this day about the people who have given their lives, you know, and when you read about something, for example, the one that I've been reading about lately is the Burma, China, India, the things that those guys put up with, and the people who died just because they were worn out is amazing. So I know there's a lot of talk about this stuff this weekend, and for people who lost family members or other people, you know, we should do more to recognize them, I think, but it's hard to do that when people don't feel that across the board. They just think of it as a peaceful holiday, and they don't really think twice about it. There was a CNN piece that just set people straight on the different holidays. Veterans Day is for veterans, where you recognize and literally thank veterans for their service. And they said that there's now people on Labor Day thanking veterans for their service. And it's confusing to the veterans. Labor Day is a day to celebrate or to recognize workers. It has nothing to do with war. So I don't know why anyone would even think of doing that. But it's just typical in this country that people really don't know what the hell's going on. So speaking of, talking about frivolous pursuits, so it's just an odd weekend because you have this juxtapositioning of people who have given the greatest sacrifice for their country, whether or for their comrades, you know, in service to their country, they have died. They have given up everything in service to the United States through the military. And we have a situation in Minneapolis, and I think this is unique to places like Minneapolis, and I would maybe include Seattle in this. I can see this happening in Seattle. So we have these things here, and I don't know if you have them where you live, wherever it is that you live. We have these things called pedal pubs. And pedal pubs are these trolleys that people sit at a bar, and they pedal, and the pedal pub goes down the street, and there's a bartender that serves, and, you know, they seem to be fun things to do. It's a fun thing to do on a Saturday afternoon, go get on a pedal, you know, get some friends together and book a pedal pub, and it goes up and down the street. They are kind of problematic with traffic to a certain extent. They've tried to address that by not necessarily going on main streets. And I was unaware that there was even a controversy about pedal pubs. But there is a movement in Minneapolis called, you know, We Hate the Pedal Pubs. And the idea is that they're noisy and disruptive and they cause problems with traffic. In the Twin Cities and elsewhere, I hate the pedal pub sentiment has surfaced on social media with complaints about noise, traffic blocking, and public drunkenness. A local Facebook page opposing the pedal pubs has 3,813 likes, which is really not that many. A posting on the Twin Cities Facebook page of I Hate the Pedal Pub said bicyclists, were going to gather at 1 p.m. Saturday at Loring Park, and they were going to pull a Mad Max on the pedal pub with water balloons and squirt guns. Well, they did. They managed to get attacked, and I hate to use the word attack because it's squirt guns and water balloons, but yeah, they attacked. They managed two attacks on pedal pubs, and then a potential third attack at 4th and 1st Avenue North was thwarted when apparently the pedal pub that they tried to attack, they spotted the cyclists approaching, and it turned out to be a pedal pub full of off-duty police officers, which I doubt was a coincidence. My suspicion is that since the city had advance notice this is going to happen, that somebody called somebody and the police put people on the pedal pub. Maybe it was a coincidence. I don't know. But in any case, I would have loved to have been at the bar after that where the cops went to to talk about this. But what is wrong with these people? What's wrong with this getting into this cyclist thing with these people, these bicyclists, who have now appointed themselves as brown shirts to either block traffic or to champion some political cause, as though they are somehow appointed to be the special people in town, the superior race of people who can tell everyone else how they're supposed to act and what they're supposed to do. One of my pet peeves, and this is every season this happens, is this idea that if you're on a bike and you're on a bike path and you go across a main road, that the cars are supposed to stop for you. There is a stop sign on the bike path ahead of the main path, and you are supposed to stop like anybody else and wait for the cars. That is the law. And I can't tell you how many times almost accidents have been caused because idiots will stop short of a bicycle path so that these bicycle people can ride by. And I refuse to stop for them. And I make it obvious that I'm not going to stop, whether I flash my lights or honk my horn, because they have to stop. But these guys, and I'm not saying all of them, but a number of these bicyclists act as though they have the right of way in every situation. And it's really frustrating to me. You know, the city of Minneapolis has a bicycle manager. Now, they arrested every single one of these guys. But honestly, the city ought to throw the book at them because, first of all, it's dangerous, and it's dangerous for a lot of reasons, aside from the fact that people might try to get off the pedal pub and chase somebody and get hit by a car. But worse, and I'm going to say it again, you know, people are, you don't know what you're dealing with when you do stuff like this, where people might react in ways that you might not be prepared for, with weapons, whether they be gang members or otherwise, because they think that their lives are being threatened because you think it's a funny prank. And it's all part of this sense of entitlement that we have engendered in this city with certain groups of people because who knows? I mean, I couldn't tell you what the reason is. To me, it's just ridiculous. Is it this huge sense of entitlement of I can protest wherever I want, I can do whatever I want. And if I'm a bicyclist, I have some sort of special right, a double vote or something, or sanction, because I'm a superior human being because I ride a bike. It's ridiculous. And I speak from experience because I rode my bike to work 16 miles a day for 7 years, and long before there were bike trails. So I rode on the street, and I understand all the difficulties with cars. But after a while, and I'm going to say this because I have to say it as a disclaimer every time I do this, you learn to anticipate what drivers are going to do, and the idea is to stay out of their way, not to confront them. It's not a confrontational, and shouldn't be a confrontational thing. It's basically to stay out of their way. Now, I didn't obey traffic laws either, but I also wouldn't ride pell-mell into traffic just assuming that they wouldn't hit me because supposedly I was a superior person because I was riding a bike. There's something about riding a bike that makes people really aggressive, and somebody needs to talk about it. You know, if we're going to talk about meditation and mindfulness treatment that causes mania, depression, and psychosis, then we should be talking about aggressive behavior, which is encouraged by bicycling, right? And yes, there is a new study that says, and I have to talk about this because it's irritating to me, because it mentions yoga. It talks about, and I'm going to give you some insight on yoga just for fun. This is an article in the Daily Mail that I ran across today that, you know, another one of these, I don't know, they write these things specifically to upset people. That's the thing. And what's funny about this article is they did a study and found out that mindfulness training, whether it's transcendental meditation, yoga, and other types of things, have positive and negative effects. And usually you only hear about the positive effects. You don't hear about the negative effects. And the negative effects can include psychosis and hallucinations, as well as depression, because depression can be triggered through certain types of meditation. And then what really gets me, what really made me laugh was they used as an example Gwyneth Paltrow, who's a raving lunatic, and Russell Brand, who is also a raving lunatic, and as examples of, and this is the British, so you gotta give them a break because it's in some ways it's tongue in cheek, but they use these two maniacs as examples of what can happen if you do too much transcendental meditation. And then they talk about yoga. So I'm going to just say a couple things about yoga. First of all, you know, yoga as mindfulness training. I don't know that it's mindfulness training. And it certainly isn't meditation unless you choose to make it meditation. But something I learned a long time ago about yoga is that people go to yoga because they think it's going to calm them down, or their type A personalities, and they're concerned that they're getting too intense or something like that. And all yoga does is it amplifies what is inside you. So if you're intense, you're just going to be more intense if you do yoga. And the more yoga you do, the more intense you're going to be. The only thing that it does do is it makes you more aware of that stuff so that you can make adjustments, you know, mentally about your personality. You are more mindful of the things that you say and do because that's the nature of the beast. But I wouldn't say that it triggers psychosis and depression, because I don't get depressed, so I couldn't really note that thing. Depression is not one of my problems, but I will tell you this. I do believe that yoga and certain kinds of yoga do create a situation where you will see things, because I've experienced it. And your consciousness, if you do enough yoga, like I double dip a lot, and when you double dip, your consciousness goes higher and you will see things. You will see them in your mind's eye. It's not like you actually see things, but you experience things in your mind's eye, and it's an awareness. And it could be perceived as some form of psychosis if you're not prepared for it. Now, the first time it happened to me, I was doing Bikram twice a day, and it's very focused on the backbone. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of things going on with the back and the brain, right? Especially when you start moving energy up and down the spine. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of my Christian friends are like, that's the devil and everything else. And the thing is, you have to understand it in order to manage it, because when you start moving energy up your spine and it does things, it freaks you out. My experience was, and I was talking about this week with somebody else, that, you know, when I was doing that much yoga, and if you do a lot of it, you don't have needs because your needs are filled up. You get what you need. You know, you have to be very careful with how you manifest things, because if you want a pencil, somebody will bring you a pencil, literally. I mean, I've had it happen. If you're thinking about an old friend, you'll get a call. If you know, if you have a thought, you have a tendency to bring that stuff closer to you. So you got to be careful about what you think about it. That's what they mean by mindfulness. And I think a lot of people confuse transcendental meditation and yoga as somehow it's going to make them a better human being. You have to make yourself a better human being. And there's many ways to do that. You know, there are, if people who are super religious make themselves better human beings, people who do yoga make themselves better human beings, but also they make themselves worse human beings because it doesn't have a yay or a nay. It provides a window into your soul, and what you do with it is up to you. And I think that's an important thing to point out, but you might see that bantied about this weekend. What else was I going to talk about? Oh, yeah. I'm on the technology watch, continuing to be on the technology watch, because now the big thing is human intelligence and artificial intelligence and how robots are going to take over the world very soon. And this is now the new thing. And it's very interesting because there's a movie about this already, and it's a natural fear. I watched that movie with what is her name? She was in Lost in Translation with Bill Murray. You know, big star, sexy voice, whatever her name is. But she was in this movie where she was a drug mule, and they put this drug inside her. They operated her and put these drugs inside her, and the bag burst, and the drug that they put in her was some kind of super, you know, brain chemical thing. And in sparing amounts would get people high, but in vast amounts, what it did was it made her supposedly be able to use 100% of her brain. And it was all based on this idea that we only use 10 to 11% of her brain, which, by the way, has been disproven. That is now not, whenever you hear somebody say that, you know, if you'd use more of your brain, well, you know, you would be incredible. People could do incredible things if they used more of their brain. That's really not how it works. But anyway, Morgan Freeman was in it, and of course he played the university professor that came up with this theory about using 100% of your brain. Well, anyway, she used 100% of her brain, and she became so smart that she became a machine. And that's one of the movies, and there's going to be a bunch of them where the robots go out of control and kill human beings. You know, kind of a Terminator scenario. And this is the great fear, and it's a subconscious fear that people have of automation and autonomous software, and really gifts to society and gifts of the of human intelligence to enable us to move to the next phase. It is an industrial revolution, and we had similar fears during the industrial revolution that came out in literature, and certainly at the dawn of the 20th century, the fears that people had of living in, you know, dystopian cities and places like that, some of which came true, but good things also came out of it, and we're all still here, and it wasn't the end of the world. And this is also the same with robots. But I did find a story I actually liked, because it refers to and it doesn't specifically refer to this thing in China, but they've come up with this technology that allows them to actually splice DNA, which is very dangerous because it's called CRISPR. And I don't know the rest of the term, but I'll just use CRISPR, because these scientists have figured out how to literally splice DNA. So they can splice DNA to solve certain kinds of problems. For example, potentially, they could splice DNA so that you would pass on 20/20 vision and higher muscle function and higher levels of coordination, let's say, to your offspring. So you could have a baby that would be, you know, super talented athletically or more intelligent, right? Or both. So with gene splicing technology, it's one thing. But with DNA splicing, it's like gene splicing on steroids, is my understanding. And, you know, people are really worried about that, because the problem is there's no regulation. And I've talked about this a little bit. One of the biggest problems that we're going to have is how do you regulate that? And do you regulate that? And if you regulate that, you know, when do you regulate that? Because what's happening is laws are being outstripped by technology really quickly. You know, when they came up with, the best way to explain that is when the Model T was invented, there were no roads. Right? So they had to build roads, and they had to create traffic laws, and it was a whole body of law that had to be developed over time. But the car was already functioning, and people were already driving them, during that period of time that they were figuring out they couldn't build, you know, gravel roads anymore that were designed to accommodate horses and buggies because cars couldn't navigate that. So anyway, I don't want to get off on a long thing, but one of the really cool things that they're talking about is that the next revolution in human beings will be the amalgamation of man and machine. In other words, using bioengineering as well as really small processors and things like, hip replacement surgery and things of that nature. And also, my favorite thing is the age reversal technology, which is also coming along with the gene splicing stuff, that you would essentially produce hybrids. And of course, they always put a picture from a movie of these Halloween looking hybrids of, they look like robots or men wearing armor, but it probably won't look like that. And it provokes this whole question, if you could, would you? And the scientist who talks about this is this guy named Yuval Noah Harari. And I love these stories because they're always from some bizarre place, like some university in Wales, or this is the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. But he talks about the evolution of religion as a way to control human beings, and the evolution of money as a way to control human beings, and that this evolution would be really unique because for the first time human beings would be godlike. We would be gods, literally, supposedly. And the thing is, would you do it if you could? So if you could do CRISPR, you know, or if you could do gene splicing, or if you could take age reversal drugs, or if you could get surgery that would reverse aging and do, and I'm talking about plastic surgery, I'm talking about literally gene surgery that would reverse the geriatric process, would you? Because I think that's one of the most bizarre and great questions, and really nobody's writing about it. I mean, there really hasn't been anything written about what kind of world will exist when people can afford to get these treatments that would allow them to live as a 30-year-old for extended periods of time, that they would be able to extend their life. And in addition, they would be able to use artificial intelligence and implants and all sorts of things to make them really almost literally a super race, where they were stronger and were able to use all sorts of communications, webs, and everything else. So when I think about that, I get really excited with the nonfiction applications of that, because if you had a society where that was possible, you talk about inequality. And the thing is, here's what will happen, because this is what did happen with communications technology. You know, at first, the first cell phones were really, really expensive, and you had to have the thing in your trunk, right? And then it was wired into the car. So you had to buy this thing, and then you had to go someplace where they hooked it up in your 1980 Mercedes, and then you had this giant antenna, and you had this huge handset that you used. And I remember my best friend Steve Steiner's dad was on the fire department in our town, and he had an FM transceiver in his car. So he had that thing where it was like a Motorola unit, and it had an on-off switch, and then a push-to-talk on a telephone handset. And it was, you know, basically a cell phone, although it was FM frequency. It was frequency modulation, so it was FM frequency, although above 88.5, so it wasn't in the FM frequency, but it was called an FM transceiver. And if you weren't the kind of person that needed to be contacted through VHF, which is what the police radios were, and probably most of them are now, very high frequency, you had one of these FM things so that you could call the, you know, and they opened a spectrum so that you could use it for business communications. And some kids' dads worked for certain companies, like oil companies or whatever, where they had these transceivers, so if something happened, they could be contacted in the car, right? If your dad worked for the airport, you know, you had one of those. And it was all super cool. Like, wow, God, I wish I had one of those. And then, so the first cell phones were these gigantic cell phones, and they were super expensive. You know, it cost thousands of dollars to have a mobile base unit put in your car. And then the mobile units came out, and I had one that I'll never forget. The thing was $1,500, and it came with a case that was like a gun. you know, it went around your shoulder, and then you could put it underneath your arm like a gun. And I remember, like, this is cool because this is like my gun. And it was this giant cell phone, and then so I could call the station, and the station could call me if there was something going on or if I needed to take care of something. And I remember I went to the Pittsburgh airport to meet my friend Steve carrying my mobile unit, and he was like, let me see that, that's really cool, you know. And then I had a what was that, a scientific corporation or some company that made Uniden put out this 5-watt base phone that was a portable, that so it had a strap on the top and it was a portable, but it was 5-watt because the normal cell phones were 3.5 watts, so they had reception issues. But these things were super expensive, and only people, your business leased it or bought it for you, or you had to buy it yourself, and they were really, really expensive. And then they changed the laws, and more got produced. And as more and more got produced, they got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Well, this will be the same thing. You know, I mean, at first it will be really expensive to get these kinds of therapies, and only certain people will be able to afford them, like George Soros or the Koch brothers. And then as they put more and more of them out, it will become more and more available, and it will become cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And in this way, things will change. But initially, people will greet it as a horrible, dangerous thing, and you will have the choice of doing it or not doing it. And unless you're wealthy, you won't be able to afford it. And certain people get a hold of that, it'll be an inequality thing. But eventually, and I would think it will be fairly quick. I would say it'll be by 2050. We will have the ability to control our aging. We'll have the ability to reverse our aging. We'll have the ability to have high technology implanted in our bodies, and we will have the ability to add to our physical strength if we choose to, and it won't be that expensive. So I'll leave you with that on this. You know, we're doing a slow start to the week because this is Tuesday. Thank God it's a 4-day week, right? If you're working, if you're in business, it never ends. I found myself getting bored this weekend because there was no point in trying to call anybody to do any business because everyone was, so I was sitting here, you know, twiddling my thumbs. So it's back to business with Tuesday, and so we sort of a slow start to the week with some fun stories as well as some not fun stories as we close Memorial Day weekend in podcast 373 from outside. I guess I'll pour myself some more coffee. I want to thank the sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast for podcast 373, xgovernmentcars.com. Don't forget that the grand reopening event is on. I've told you all about why I love xgovernmentcars.com. Of course, this is where I got my ambulance. But the main thing is, this is where you get the kick-ass cars. You want a Charger? What more could you want out of life than a Charger, right? You want a Crown Vic? They're great. I've owned 3 of them. I still have my last one. I love it. Impalas, Expeditions, Yukons, all formerly owned by the government. One owner. They've been professionally maintained, and they are up and running and ready for you at xgovernmentcars.com. I've told you all about it. Don't forget. Check out what they've got, and you can visit them at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. Great place to go look at cars, or you can check them out online and apply safely and securely for financing at X Government Cars. Everyone is approved, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you can do that safely and securely online now at xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
I got to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcasts, Mad K Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. And Mad K is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'm going to tell you more as we get closer and closer, and maybe the mobile podcast command studio will also be there. If you want to know what digital sponsorship is, you're essentially sponsoring the BobDavisPodcast.com website, and that is probably the best advertising deal that I can offer clients of the BobDavisPodcast.com. Send me an email and ask me about that, and I'll fill you in. Click on all the banners of the Bob Davis Podcast for more information about these digital sponsors as well as the regular sponsors of the BobDavisPodcast.com, the guys that are putting commercials like I just did for X Government Cars in the podcast themselves. All right. Thanks for listening on any of these services, Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn and BlogTalkRadio.com. There are players on the page from TuneIn and Blog Talk Radio. Of course, iTunes has been serving up podcasts for a long, long time, and I've been associated with iTunes since 2009, so that's great. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. They fuel the Mobile Podcast Command Center, which, by the way, is going to be headed out east very shortly. I got to go down to Virginia for the birthday of the general manager of the Bob Davis podcast, so that should be cool. And I think I'm going to visit Norfolk, Newport News, and Washington, D.C., so I'm going to try to grab some congressmen on a particular day. I don't know when I'm going to be there yet, but I'm going to swing through Washington, swing back through the battleground of Ohio and Pennsylvania and Illinois, and maybe up through Michigan, coming back down through northern Minnesota. But I'll keep you advised and give you more information, and stand by for some on-the-road podcasts sometime in the early part of June. So I look forward to that. And thank you for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. You look for the ambulance, the Mobile Podcast Command Unit picture, and you click on the big yellow donate button, and I appreciate any donation. It's all good. $1, $5, $10, $25, $1,000, $10,000. If you contribute $10,000, I will do something really special for you. So anybody that contributes, if you contribute $1,000 or more, we'll go to dinner for sure. I guarantee you that. And again, thanks all you guys for your donations and your support at thebobdavispodcast.com on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And as I said, everything. Anyway, I'm rambling. Gotta go.